We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting scene in Professional Engineering magazine, read by Brian Perkins.
Visitors to a safari park in the West Midlands were shocked when a rhinoceros attempted to have sex with their Renault Laguna. A spokeswoman for the park apologised, describing the rhino as a bit of a lad.
Thanks to Rex Shaw for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome, first on my right, Francis Ween and Andy Hamilton. And challenging them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, the traditional easy question goes to you. Who wishes we hadn't been put in the picture about pictures?
Well, thanks a lot. That's a bundle of laughs, isn't it? It's about the Iraqis.
It is.
It's not really a very nice story at all. The American media are full of these horrendous pictures of GIs mistreating and humiliating their Iraqi prisoners. And George Bush, amazingly, had gone on Arabic TV to try and mend some fences. And he said he was going to punish the guilty. Donald Rumsfeld, in fact, I think it is, because he holds Rumsfeld responsible and has told him to go and sort himself out. But then, you know, this tragic story, rely on the Daily Mirror to turn it into farce by publishing a lot of transparently faked photographs done, I imagine, in a car park somewhere off the M6, it may well be that British troops did do things like that, but I don't think they did them in those particular pictures. They're like a sort of crime watch reconstruction. By the time the repeat goes out, it may be that the editor of the Daily Mirror has been arrested, with any luck. Couldn't happen in nice way.
I have to say, having grown up in Aldershot, I wouldn't be that surprised by the behaviour of a British soldier. I mean, to be honest, growing up in Aldershot in the 60s and 70s, we were thinking of calling in the IRA as a peacekeeping force.
I felt that Piers Morgan ought to have been possibly questioning the veracity of soldiers who come up to him and say, would you like to buy these photographs of us torturing people?
I think the Mirror's gone downhill since Piers Brosnan took it over. The best editor... best editor they ever had was Sean Connery, definitely.
President Bush and Prime Minister Blair have been forced to spend much of the week defending their troops after the publication of photos apparently showing the abuse of Iraqi detainees. In the UK, military insiders have claimed that the Mirror's photographs of alleged British torture were faked, pointing to the quality of the pictures, the uniforms worn by the men, and the fact that their equipment appears to be in working order. Andy, why are party people now all promises this week?
Oh, this is all the manifestos came out for the European elections, which are going to be used as a kind of rehearsal, really, probably for the general election. And it's a very difficult election for Blair because his approval ratings are very low because he's perceived as being 8 months pregnant with George Bush's baby now. So Labour came out with a very negative campaign which sought to hark back to Michael Howard's past under Thatcher about Britain is working again, don't let the Tories wreck it, I think was the very catchy slogan. And Michael Howard appeared in front of an astonishingly blue blacktop, which made him look very unreal. And I think they've installed fairy lights behind Michael Howard's eyes. If you watch him, there's something glittering behind his eyes, which makes, even if he just says hello, it looks sinister. I think they should take them out. Anyway, his manifesto is Britain is will work under us or some rubbish. And the Liberal Democrats, they've brought out their manifesto as well.
Charles Kennedy's manifesto is rather good. It's going to be a bestseller. It's called Eats, Drinks and Doesn't Leave.
This week, Labour, the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats all launched their local election manifestos. Labour manifesto boasts of a strong economy, saying there are now 1.8 million more jobs than there were in 1997. Unfortunately, they're all in Bangalore.
Tony Blair used to be Michael Howard's shadow, didn't he? You wouldn't think Michael Howard is the sort of bloke to have a shadow.
Jeremy, which company can't even deliver a second-class service? Yeah.
This will be the Post, which used to be called the Post and is now called Postica. Oh, And people are saying that the posties are nicking the mail. I don't think that's true. And reading between the lines, what happens is they put the wrong things in the wrong letterboxes, which is understandable, because some people have... Have you ever delivered leaflets around people's houses? People have weird letterboxes, like people have brushes to stop you delivering dusty letters to them. And so posties get fed up and just think, oh, if there's a door you can get stuff through, just bung it through and let the neighbourhood sort it out at their leisure. So you get a load of posts through to various people in South London. You think, oh, God, I should walk that round there because it's round the corner, but I was going to spend all day faffing around and dozing off, so... Oh, and it was 9 o'clock. Well, I'd be time for bed in another 14 hours, so... Well, I won't take it today. And another day goes by, and after a week, you think, well, I can't take it now. They'll think I'm weird. I think I've been looking, steaming it open. They'll think, why have I helped? Oh, what am I going to do? Well, I'll repost it. And then you don't get round to reposting it. And a couple of years go by, you think, well, they'll have moved or be dead now. So you throw it away. And that's what happens. It's not stolen at all.
I think that was right, actually. New report estimates Royal Mail loses 14.4 million letters every year. Many critics see this latest damning report as conclusive proof that philately will get you nowhere. Alan, listen to this.
The wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round, round and round. The wheels on the bus go round and round all day long.
The horn on the bus goes
beep, 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 beep.
The horn on the bus goes
beep, 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 all day long.
The wipers on the bus go swish,
swish, swish.
The wipers on the bus go swish, swish,
all day long.
Who's been bussing in the vote this week?
Oh, is it America?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. It is Bush.
It is.
And it's that amazing billionaire who's supporting Kerry. And they're whizzing this handful of demented people who are going to vote for them from state to state and county to county, and it's all gerrymandered. They're fiddling the primaries or whatever they're called. There's a lot of stuff about Kerry's campaign medal as well, which is purple art he got for cutting himself while shaving, it turns out. A serious zit opened up on his chin and they gave him a purple heart and he is now entitled to be President of America.
That's why Bush has made this big appeal on Al Arabiya. And he wants to find all the American, Arab and Muslim voters and meet them and find out their opinions and then get his brother to take their names off the electoral register.
President Bush has started his re-election campaign with a bus tour of key election battlegrounds. George W. said he's looking forward to visiting some of America's most famous and influential states, including Mexico, Canada and Rumford. And at the end of round one, everyone is level. And we start round two with a classified ad from Bexhill's Ad News free sheet.
Large hand-knitted man with hand-knitted camera, rolled umbrella and glasses, £3.
Thanks to Lord Nicholas Morgan for that. Lord Nicholas Morgan. Francis, what bird shoutest of summer in full-throated ease?
That's Keats, that is.
It is.
It's about nightingales.
Mm-hmm.
In Germany, there's been a survey, in Berlin, I think, and it found that the noise in cities is now so great that the poor old nightingales have to yell to make themselves heard. And so they're singing louder and louder and louder, especially during the morning rush hour. They have to actually bellow out their dawn chorus.
It's the noise of the marching, probably, isn't it?
And they're singing at 93 decibels or something now, which apparently is above the legal maximum for noise in Germany. So they could technically be prosecuted for not wearing ear protection. Because I think it's 85 decibels, the limit.
I read the report, and they said it only exceeds permitted noise levels if the nightingale is singing right next to your ear. Well, the nightingale's not that bold a bird. Now, a robin might do that, because they're very territorial. If you're sitting on the chair in their part of the garden, they might come and holler down your ear. But I think the nightingales are more retiring.
Well, actually, I've got a cockerel at home, the last survivor of my chickens, and he starts crowing at about 3 or 4 in the morning.
Oh, I bet your neighbours love you. But is he your cockerel?
Yeah. We used to have dozens, but the fox ate all the other ones. And this poor old cockerel, the one survivor, was so traumatised that he's on permanent jet lag. He thinks it's dawn in the middle of the night.
Can't you get him a hood without...
Well, I was actually thinking of hiring a nightingale to outshout him.
I'd hire a fox if I were you.
Why has the fox left that cockerel alive, though? It must be for a reason.
Because Francis lives in a 15th floor flat. And a fox can't reach the buttons. That would be my bet.
Researchers in Berlin have discovered the noise in cities is so bad that birds have to shout to be heard. In their study of nightingales, the team also discovered that only those males who have no partners sing. This also holds true for humans at karaoke evenings. Andy, whose hip and happening freebies have come under joint attack?
Is it to do with hip joints?
Yes.
As in the body?
Yes.
Doctors are taking bribes to give hip replacements to people who already have two hips. So there are people... it's a very serious issue. We're becoming a nation of three-hipped cripples. You might have gathered I don't know the inside sort of story on this. Well, but as a hypochondriac, I am really interested. So what is the story, Simon?
They're hip companies, which don't do very good hips. They come around with a van in the middle of the night and they've got these balsa wood and plastic hips. But certain susceptible doctors who want a weekend for two on the sunny Polish Riviera go off with hip companies and they get breakfast in bed and all that and they come home and find some poor sod and put a hinge on him. Six brass screws and a like that. And
how many hips do we have? We say hips. I thought it was just the one, or are there two separate ones?
One hip.
You've got two.
That would be silly. Son.
I can't see inside.
Is that why cowboys walk like that? Because they've got...
Well, I'm not a doctor, Simon, but I think you'll find that there's more than one hip.
Oh, OK, good.
But, you know, I think you need an X-ray to find that out.
The Public Accounts Committee has criticised surgeons who accept freebies from the manufacturers of artificial hips and the increasing use of joints that haven't been properly tested. Recipients of the untested hip joints were furious, saying they felt the surgeons had stitched them up. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, why is sending women back to the kitchen sink striking a blow for feminism?
Somebody, Equal Opportunities Commission, is trying to encourage there to be more women plumbers, which is a good idea because you can't get a plumber. And the plumbers that you can get, let's be honest... Well, there's one question... there's one question you should never ask your plumber, which is... Now, Graham, tell me the truth. I'm not going to be angry if you tell me the truth. Are you really a plumber? And they'd always say, well, Jeremy, I mean, by all means, phone British Gas, but, I mean, it will cost you. You think, yes, but that's because they use metal, Graham. Bamboo is decorative but porous. So the ladies are being encouraged not to merely have fainting fits and practice sitting on horses sideways, but to take a jolly good dose of smelling salts, get their toolboxes and get to grips with modern radiators. And I'm all for it, frankly.
Well, I did get a plumber in last summer to do a little bit of work on... There's a sort of outside tap with a pipe and just needed a bit of stuff done to it. And he spent hours making a complete mess of everything. And after hours and hours of this, he turned to me and said, sorry, I think you have to get someone else in. Pipes have never been my forte.
I don't mean to sound sexist, but I'm going to. I don't see how women can be trained to be plumbers. I mean, I don't see how they can be expected to master essentially male skills like going, mmm. are they going to do that noise? And then, and also, I'm not confident that women will be able to master that very cryptic answer to how long it's going to take, you know, which is, how long is it going to take? Well... Yeah. Women's diaphragms aren't built to make that noise. You know, it'll come out much more squeaky. It won't be as enigmatic.
Problem's going to be, they'll say, well, I could put the rad under the window, but then, of course, it's going to clash with your coasters. See, if you replace those coasters, then you've got a problem with your napkin rings and the whole kitchen's going to have to come out.
A new report says more women should be trained as plumbers to counter the UK's severe shortage. Male plumbers don't understand why women want to get into the trade, as female plumbing is a complete and utter mystery to most men. Alan, why are men always keeping their eye on the hourglass?
The way in which men fancy women who are 36, 22, 38, which sort of pictures the Daily Mirror used to have, and a scientist who lives alone in a small room in a university with a video screen and a lot of films, has worked out that his desire exactly corresponds to the proper genetic approach to a woman's body, in that if she looks like that, she'll have good babies.
It rang very true, I thought, as a piece of research, that men are attracted to women for evolutionary reasons because, you know, that shape they know will be the most fertile for the propagation of the species, because that is a conversation you hear among men in pubs all the time. God, look at that girl over there. She's got the kind of body that is the most fertile for the propagation of the human species.
A team of scientists in Krakow claims to have found biological evidence of Western male...
That was that bloke there laughing at Krakow. They're making up their own jokes now. This is the beginning of the end for us.
A team of scientists in Krakow claim to have found biological evidence of Western males' preference for women with an hourglass figure. Study group were divided into large breasts, narrow waist, large breasts, broad waist, small breasts, narrow waist, and small breasts, broad waist. A further category of large breasts, broad waist, massive gut was abandoned when the team realised they were studying John Prescott. And at the end of round two, Alan and Jeremy are 1 point ahead. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting taken from a tourist leaflet for the French town of Avalon.
Historically, Avalon was often burned, pillaged, and its inhabitants slaughtered or decimated by outbreaks of plague. The tourism office wishes you a pleasant stay.
Thanks to Bill Good of Primrose Hill for that. Francis, listen to this. Won't the fat lady be singing till she's pitched her tent, smoked a funny cigarette and got herself covered in mud?
The English National Opera are going to be performing at the Glastonbury Festival this year. They're doing part of the Ring Cycle. Bit of a turn-up for Glastonbury. I think most people who go there imagine it's something you get on your mobile phone, the Ring Cycle. But they'll soon find out, because they're going to be blasted out of their tents on a Sunday morning by the sound of that, the Ride of the Valkyries, and then they're going to be strafed by helicopter gunships.
So they're going to do this in a field?
Yeah.
Well, that's going to annoy the nightingales no end. That's... there'll be nightingales with bloody loudhailers going.
This year's Glastonbury Festival is to feature opera for the first time, with the ENO performing part of Wagner's Ring Cycle. Opera and pop haven't clashed quite as spectacularly as this since that terrible day when Pavarotti accidentally sat on Kylie. Andy, what one act of rebranding is a load of number twos?
Am I being thick?
No, I know this because I travel on these trains quite often.
Okay.
In East Anglia, for the last few years, they've had a wonderful rail company called Anglia, which is proper old-fashioned trains. They run on time. you get Kedgeree and Kippers in the breakfast car, all that sort of thing. And so, of course, they lost their franchise in April. And it was given to a company called One. And I was there on Ipswich Station the following week. And I noticed that whereas they used to say, you know, the 7:30 Anglia service to London, Liverpool Street, is from Platform One, they said the 7:30 One service to Liverpool Street, which caused some confusion. and it's caused so much confusion that they've now had to drop it.
That's like that other rail company who played a lot of money at marketing people, and it was a disaster because they called it cancelled.
On the first week, there's this little branch line from Ipswich to Woodbridge, and normally at peak times they have a couple of carriages on it. And that week they put it down to one carriage, so it was absolutely crammed. And the guard said, "This is the new One train service."
East Anglia's latest train service franchise has caused untold confusion by rebranding itself under the name One. The new train service has caused massive confusion in East Anglia, where people cower in fear and awe as the shiny metal beast thunders through the fens at speeds of up to 5 miles an hour. Jeremy, who's put the bite on false teeth?
Is this grow your own teeth?
Yes.
You can now, instead of having dentures or implants, you can get stem cells put in the holes where your teeth have been pulled, and they will grow into something, but you've got to nudge it into the right thing, because a stem cell can grow into anything, apparently. So you could end up with an elbow in your mouth. Something like that. You could end up with all kinds of things in your mouth. In the Navy. madam? No, but the thing is, you might want to have a hand in your mouth and then it could sort of, like, brush your teeth in the day, discreetly after meals, without you having to get a toothbrush out. Save toothbrushing misery by having a handy hand in the mouth. There's all kinds of things you can grow in the mouth. Germs. Friendly bacteria, unfriendly bacteria, nodding acquaintance bacteria.
I'm very concerned about this stem cell research because the technology seems to be advancing very quickly, and they are talking about a situation where, you know, if somebody loses an arm, say, in an industrial accident, you know, you would be able to grow them a new arm from the stem cells. Well, I just think this has very serious implications for health and safety, because I think people will get very reckless and careless if they think, shall I put the guard on that dangerous machine? Because it could rip my arm off. Oh, what the hell? I've got 12 in the fridge back home. It completely alters the way you look at your life if you know you can grow new bits.
Also, if they grow, it's only going to look right for quite a short time, isn't it? Most of the time, it's going to be too small or too big. And there'll just be that golden honeymoon period when your arm is the right length. And after that, you start looking like a bouncer.
A team at the Dental Institute of King's College London, led by Professor Paul Sharp, has come up with a way for people to grow new teeth using their own stem cells. The technique is still under development. At present, it has only been shown to work on mice, horses and Janet Street Porter. Alan, which cocky so-and-sos are terrorising Cookley?
It's peacocks.
It is.
Language.
It's this village in the middle of somewhere. Always described as sleepy. They're always sleepy villages. And this one is sleepy no longer. Of course, 14, count them, peacocks have turned up and are eating cars. And there they are. They're tearing this place apart and slashing people with their fearful beaks. And the peacock turns out not to be an attractive thing at all, but extremely unpleasant, feral animal that will have your leg off as soon as look at you. And they have descended en masse on this village in Hampshire. And there is no way of getting rid of them because they are a protected national treasure and you can't shoot peacocks or stuff them. So,
so a peacock can break your swan. So people think the peacock is a bird, but it's actually a land-living shark.
They're very stupid birds as well, because I remember being in a castle in Scotland and being highly amused watching this peacock attacking its reflection in a bin. for hours.
It's the villagers of Cookley in the Wyre Forest who are being terrorised by a group of 14 cruel and vicious peacocks. According to Greek myth, the eyes on a peacock's tail were stolen by Hermes from Argos, which is disgraceful when you realise how reasonable most of their prices are. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from the TV listings in The Bulletin, which is an English-language newspaper for British expats in Brussels. Sunday, April the 25th, BBC Two, Bible Mysteries. This programme explores the belief that the Book of Revelation is a guide to one of the greatest riddles of all, the date for the end of the world. Postponed from Sunday, April the 11th.
Andy.
This is from Marion Barton, and it's a property advert. New, a most impressive, fully detached, five double-bedroom family house. Superb living room, dining room, study, bedroom, five playrooms, four en suite, charming gardens, WC, no chain.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by Albert Riley, who lives in Germany. It says, frozen out, a German man who survived 5 days in the Alps in freezing temperatures by eating snow has been fired because he missed work. Aeronautical engineer Thomas Milnick received written notification of his dismissal while doctors at the hospital were deciding whether to amputate six of his frostbitten toes.
Ooh.
Hard but fair.
Alan.
Mine's from the Brighton Argus, Simon. It reads, the Horum sign at the entrance to the village from the Heathfield direction has been knocked down by vehicles many times, but its future should now be secure, the parish council heard at last week's meeting. Councillor David Finch said that previously cars had hit the sign and then bounced off it into a nearby oak tree. Now that the sign had been re-sited behind it, motorists would have to hit the tree first.
Thank you, Alex, for the final score. Francis and Andy have done incredibly well, but Jeremy Allen have just done slightly better. And before we leave you, here's a classified ad taken from eBay.
Breast enhancer, buy two and get one free.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, George Poles, and Lucy Clark, and the producer was Simon Nicholas.